The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
It is that time again. Welcome back to Afternoons with Mike on the Shepherd. On the line with me from, I'm betting, the cold and wintry feeling New York, Joe Pinion. Welcome to my program, Joe.
Good to be here with you, my friend. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you know, a lot of people would know you from the times on the news programs. You've carried a lot of the news cycles on the different channels like Fox News. You've been on there, also having your own program on Newsmax. So people are familiar with you. They may not know all of the background. That's what we're going to uncover today. But boy, this has been a ride. And now you're finding yourself being challenged by, and I liked it before we started today, you said you crossed the Rubicon. You made the decision. You threw that proverbial hat into the ring, and you are now an official U.S. Senate candidate. And that is to represent the great state of New York. That is a massive calling, and you've jumped in. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you so much. And obviously, again, we don't make the decision lightly. But sometimes, you know, again, we're called to do not what's in our time, but what's in God's time. And I think when you look at the pain that people all across this state are experiencing, you look at the disarray that seems to have been thrust upon the world through no fault of our own, but simply by lack of what I call principled stewardship. It seemed as if we had no choice but to enter the fray if we felt we had a message that could carry the day and can really help build an uncommon coalition to help put this state and put this nation back on a track that we think is commensurate and consistent with the founders' intent.
Now, you mentioned this phrase, cross the Rubicon. I recently had a guest on my show, and they're kind of a little bit of a political analyst, and they were looking at all the things that have gone on, especially in the two big states of New York and California. And they would have been, surprisingly to me, I might add, even as believers, they would have been a bit resigned that it's too late, that indeed the state of New York had, in a sense, crossed the Rubicon. But I'm getting you don't believe that, right?
Well, no. I think we're certainly getting to the point of no return. But I certainly think we're on the precipice where we can still turn it around and get this state and get this country headed in the right direction. You know, I do think in many ways, as New York goes, so goes the nation. And I think, again, because when you have a place that is, whether you like it or not, the financial capital of the country,
without a doubt,
if you see that state going off the rails, if you see the permissiveness that we've seen with crime and violence seeping into the drinking water, you'll see it everywhere. And I think we've seen evidence of that already. When you have, again, what I've called the three most dangerous words ever uttered in modern politics, defund the police. and that to me is not just political, but moral. When you look at what happened in the wake of that, as billions of dollars were taken out of police budgets, we saw in places like New York shootings go up 90%. We saw homicide go up 30%. And outside of New York, again, the trends follow. 12 U.S. cities hit all-time highs when it comes to homicide, and 2021 became the deadliest year to wear a badge in the history of keeping the statistic. So you have 125% increase in ambush killings for police officers, 476 officers killed in the line. The question has to be asked, who benefited from this policy?
That's right.
And in many ways, unfortunately, the smallest majority in Congress since World War II was paid for by the blood of innocent people trying to live their day-to-day existence. And overwhelmingly, too many of those people were the people from those marginalized Black and brown communities that the policies claimed they were intending to help in the first place. So I think the time is now. I think it certainly is not too late. And as long as we have breath in our body, we should be doing everything humanly possible to make sure that the values we cherish, make sure they have a place to call home.
You know, I think a lot of people, Joe, are asking the question, what kind of values do they have? And I think your answer that you've just given us, it really points to that. It is rather selfish and rather narrow. And there is this surprise that I think a lot of us are still feeling. And you'll hear it in statements like, is this America? Is this happening here in the U.S.? It seems impossible, does it not, that our country has decided to do some of the things that we've decided to do. When I say we, I'm talking about our government has decided to do some things that are shocking, and it seems foolish on so many counts. Would you not agree?
Well, look, I think no matter how you slice it, we have policies that make no sense. You can't tell me. Again, there are plenty of perspectives on how we should deal with COVID. But as I've often said, my grandfather told me, I don't get to tell you what to believe in, but I do get to demand you be consistent. And so if it is the consistent belief of this president and this administration that COVID is so dangerous that we needed to ban travel to 8 African nations to help stop the spread of Omicron, even though the Omicron variant had already reached 12 U.S. states and 37 different countries. If it is the belief of this president and this administration that we need to have a vaccination policy for the globe so we can vaccinate all the citizens of the world, it would beg to ask the question, why are we not vaccinating the 2 million people who are knocking on our back door on the southern border? Why are we not testing the tens of thousands of people that we are flying to regional airports all across this country, from Westchester Airport in New York to that small regional airport in Abilene, Texas. These are not policies consistent with the words coming out of the mouths of our leaders, with the policies being implemented by our healthcare experts. And so, again, we just have to have consistency, because in the absence of consistency, we have chaos. And we have distrust. Mm-hmm. And it is that distrust that has led to a society that is so deeply divided over how we get past this once in a generational challenge, because of the fact that the trust has deteriorated, because people are saying one thing and implementing policies that would lead you to believe another.
That's really true. There seems to be no shortage of hypocrisy, complete hypocrisy on the part of not only the progressive left and those that are in the administration that is currently occupying the White House, but there also is this hypocrisy in the media, where the media reports these things, and it's almost like the battle that a person like you, who is standing for what would be now considered by many to be archaic values of the United States. They're not archaic. They are the values that made this country exceptional and great. But they would treat you like you're some sort of strange person when these ideas that are they're being thrust upon us and we're being asked to believe them, everything from transgender on down, we're being asked to believe what is ridiculous. And this whole thing that you've just brought up, the lack of inoculating or giving vaccines to this mess that's going on at the border, it's just insane.
I mean, look, as President Trump famously said when he came down that escalator back in 2015, either we have a country or we don't. And more so than the phrase make America great again or keep America great or America first, I think that was a phrase and the ethos that really tapped into what a lot of people were feeling. What makes a country? What defines us? Who are we as a people? And I think in many ways that has to begin with a belief in the rule of law, with a belief in sovereignty. And bit by bit, we see example after example that there is no reverence for sovereignty. There is no respect for what it means to be a member of the American family, whether you have people here in New York trying to push for new voting laws that would allow people who aren't even citizens of this country to vote
in local elections.
That is not, again, showing reverence for citizenship. People who, again, have made huge sacrifices to come to this country through legal channels to become a vested member of our American family, people who are born here, people who have died for the constitutional protections that in some cases are only found here in America, that have made America the envy of the world. And so, again, you cannot protect anything that you do not revere. And protecting America has to start with people who love America.
Mm-hmm.
And to love America means you have to love all the people that call America home, whether you agree with them or not. Civility is not just a catchphrase. It is a choice that we have to make every single day. And so the people who say that they are tired of division have to choose to make sure they go in a different direction from the individuals who sow that division, even if those people happen to share their political sensibilities.
You know, there's something that maybe you could speak to, and this just always boggles my mind. We talked about one of the phrases that you just mentioned, the rule of law, that this country was built on understanding law and abiding by law, and it's a nation of laws, not overbearing laws, and not like a monarchy or a where we have a tyrant as a king, but as a nation that is a republic. Now we fast forward to the year 2022, and now you talked about the defund the police movement that came out last year. That's got to be the most insane thing I've ever heard. And you also have situations right there in New York where your governor had to resign in really a scandal, and a lot of it just seems to be going on. He resigned for something that might have been a lesser offense when you compare what went on with COVID and the treatment of those in nursing homes. And I know you were touched by that dramatically yourself.
I mean, I don't even know where you begin with all of this, because when you look at the fact that we had a governor who effectively was forced to resign because of those, you know, truly egregious accusations of sexual assault and or sexual creating a hostile work environment for sexual harassment. Certainly, that's abhorrent. But I would hope that people would also find it abhorrent that thousands of grandparents were placed at risk and died because of policies that were implemented by this governor. And then instead of learning from those policies, because let's be very clear, in our personal life and also in our public lives, people make mistakes. They hid the mistakes, changed the numbers, and continued to implement the policy, which resulted in more deaths. We know this, and yet nothing has been done. There has been no investigation. We have politicians that love to investigate any and all manner of mistakes, both public and personal failings, and yet no one is even looking into this.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think, what is the respect and the reverence that we have for life? What is the respect and reverence we have that transcends our politics? We should just have a baseline that we can depend on from our neighbors and our elected officials. And when that fails us, then society no longer functions as it was intended. Because again, as you point out, America was designed to protect the ultimate minority, which has very little to do with the color of your skin. The ultimate minority is the individual. We are an individual rights nation, a nation designed to escape the tyranny of a king and the tyranny of government. Mob rule, specifically, is what America was founded to ensure that its citizens never had to endure. And yes, there have been things that make it difficult for us to achieve that more perfect union, but baked into the DNA of this nation is the ability to have redress with your government to make sure that people of all walks in life have a pathway to ensure that the American dream applies equally to them as it does to anybody else. That's what makes America great. That's why we keep fighting for it. That's why, in the face of all of our shortcomings, There are 4 million people today still standing in line legally to come to this country, and millions upon millions of people who, through their own reasons, are trying to come here, either seeking asylum or illegally, because irrespective of their intent, they know that there is no greater place to call home.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier some of these flights that are going to different ports, different cities in the United States where illegal immigrants are being flown under a bit of covert wrap. And that's what we hear about. We heard about a story this week in Orlando of something like that happening. It was later, the story was later by a TV station debunked. So there are a lot of people that says, is that really happening? Do you think that
it is unequivocally happening, right? To the extent that it's happening in mass. I mean, look, let's be very clear. We're not talking about millions upon millions of people being moved around the country every single day. But we know concretely that there are federal planes flying into places like the White Plains Airport here in New York, carrying people who are undocumented, who have received from our government what I've called the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory golden ticket to entry.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if I don't run the government, I'm not at the Department of Homeland Security, but I can tell you what their policy is. Their policy is that they do not test people for COVID at the border unless the people are symptomatic. And even if the people are symptomatic, it is not the responsibility of the Department of Homeland Security to test them for COVID. That task is left for local health officials at their own discretion. So effectively, again, there is no mechanism by which the Department of Homeland Security, which is screening the people for entry and allowing some of those individuals to continue on via passage into the United States to test or vaccinate people, all in the midst of what they call a global pandemic, where we, again, still have restrictions on people's God-given constitutional rights to combat said pandemic. So again, two things cannot be correct at the same time. We have to have policies that are consistent, that make sense, that inspire confidence amongst the public, because that's the only way you get the buy-in necessary to make sure that we can get through this thing together.
My goodness, these things just boggle my mind. And I have talks with my wife, and we have to, you know, we just have to come to a point and stop and pray and say, God, have mercy. If it weren't for the ability that we have as believers to trust in our sovereign God and realize that through history, we're not the only people that have ever gone through this kind of problems or persecution. And we are seeing a lot of religious persecution develop in our own country. And I think a lot of people would be surprised that this is happening given the nature of our origin. But we have often heard it, and rightly so, be called the American experiment. And this experiment is right now in jeopardy, and we've got to really take a lot of hard look at what's going on before we're ever going to be able to make any changes, right?
Absolutely. And I think for me, day by day, as you call it, is the experiment, right? The greatest experiment in democracy, making sure that we are this example for the world. Where else in the world do you have such a robust multicultural existence? It simply does not exist. And, you know, I have all of these individuals on the other end of the spectrum who talk about Belgium and Sweden and all these places where supposedly they've gotten it right while we consistently get it wrong. And I'll remind them that if I showed up in one of these places asking for entry, there'd be somebody waiting to greet me there saying, "You shall not pass." The majority of these places that they point to as these examples of democracy done right do not have a great deal of people that look like me. There are a lot of people with very blonde hair and very blue eyes who all look the same, all have the same background, and as such, do not have the same challenges that we face here building a multicultural society. And so I think people lose appreciation for just how unique America is, that we have taken people of all walks of life from all around this planet, where you were defined not by how you were born or who you were born to, but by simply the virtue of saying, were you born an American or have you taken the steps to become American?
Mm-hmm.
That is something that in many ways is unique to America. And I think that it needs to be cherished. I think that it needs to be rediscovered. And I think that we can do our part in our politics, in our churches, and in our communities to nurture and cultivate that renewed American love and expression of gratitude.
Joe Pinion is my guest today. He's a candidate for Senate in New York. We'll be back with Joe in a moment. It is a real honor to have Joe Pinion on the line with me today. Joe is from New York. Joe, your background, is that where you grew up in that same area in the Empire State?
So I'm a New Yorker through and through, born and raised. I was born and raised in Yonkers, New York, which is the third largest city in New York State now, according to the last census. But again, in that first tier of suburbs north of New York City, was predominantly a working class community. It started off as the robust Irish and Italian population, and eventually became much more diverse. And I always say Yonkers is a microcosm for America, a city that started off with a large immigrant background, eventually ended up having robust portions of minorities, African-Americans and Hispanics. And so that's what we see in Yonkers. But again, I was born and raised there, went to school in the Bronx and in the city, and then had the opportunity to go to university at Colgate University, played football there, go Gate. And then home, was initially working in the tech space on some a sports website startup with some friends that I went to high school with and some friends they went to college with, and then eventually pivoted to go work in the nonprofit healthcare space. Specifically, I was working at a healthcare organization, 18 school-based medicine facilities, 9 standalone facilities in the Bronx that was founded by my mother back in 1979. And so I joined back in 2013, working on the foundation side, focused specifically on youth development, trying to make sure that we could provide bridge grant funding for children that we were working with in those 18 school-based facilities who just needed a little bit of extra money to go away to college. Because mm-hmm. what we found was that we had children not necessarily going to their top choice because they simply lacked the extra bit of resources they need to basically stabilize their life. And so they would stay home and go to the city university instead of going to Ithaca College, instead of going to SUNY Buffalo or SUNY Albany, because they couldn't afford the winter coats that they would need in a much colder environment in Buffalo. They couldn't mm-hmm. afford the extra comforter they needed to put on their bed in the dorm when the first one needed to get cleaned. So it seems so small, and yet it made all the difference in the lives of these aspiring young people who had already shot the moon coming from these disadvantaged environments where the vast majority of our children, again, qualified as federally at the federal level as financially disadvantaged. So I worked on that for a long time, but always I would say in the background, I was always politically engaged. I was a secretary for the Manhattan Young Republicans. I was the outreach director for the New York State Young Republicans, rapid response director for the National Federation of Young Republicans. And so in those forward facing volunteer posts that I had with the Young Republican organization, I had the opportunity to interface with the press on a pretty regular basis. And so, as I say, one news article that I get a quote in turns into a stand up interview at a public event, turns into the opportunity for me to be on TV doing political panels. And, one thing leads to another. And the next thing I know, I have my own show on Newsmax. And so there is some virtue in that saying that good things happen to those who show up. And I think by virtue of continuing to show up, continuing to engage, working on campaigns, interfacing with people in the political space and the media space, I was able to, carve out some opportunities where my passion was able to, in many ways, bloom into my profession.
You know, you mentioned something that I want to jump in on, and that it's so important to realize that people do not know where they're going to ultimately end up. They couldn't know. You didn't know that one day all of this, like you said, your opportunity to do a stand-up reporter kind of a gig and that turns into your own show on Newsmax, people just can't see the end from the beginning. But the reason this happens is because we're living in a country where the freedom to get to do things like that has been there. Yet, Joe, we are told regularly by the news media that we are a prejudiced, racist group. We need the CRT type of education. We need to realize that we are just systematically bad through and through. And it's almost as if we have been not the land of opportunity, but the land of complete racist views and oppression. And that's just drives so many of us older Americans bonkers. It's crazy.
Right. I mean, it's really crazy when we've reached at a point in society where we can't have a disagreement without somehow the person on the other side of the argument being evil. I certainly have been a Republican the majority of my life. I subscribe to what I guess would traditionally be called conservative views, center-right views. I do not believe that the people who do not agree with me are inherently bad people. I think that they might have bad solutions to what I think are the problems facing society, but I don't think that they are bad people. And I think that that has become this ridiculous proxy, right? Where I've often said in our politics, we have what I've described as a love language disconnect. Where, you know, some people in their personal lives, right? Some people like personal time and quality time. Some people's love language is gifts, right? And so when you have someone whose love language is quality time dating somebody whose love language are gifts, the two people start to feel as if the other person doesn't care about them. And I think that we see that in our politics manifest at a level that has become toxic. When you have individuals like Republicans and conservatives who really focus on the methods, what are the methods to achieve better outcomes? What is the data saying? Going to people on the left who are really hyper-focused on outcomes, which we see in the sloganeering, right? It's the defund the police. That's the outcome, right? It's healthcare for all people, right? Universal healthcare, right? They're very focused on the outcomes. When method people talk to outcome people, the outcome people start to believe that you didn't actually hear the words that came out of their mouth. I think that's what's happened in our politics. And I think particularly in our election here in 2022, and I think all across this country, there's an opportunity to have realignment because the pain has also been realigned. Mm-hmm. When, again, you see one out of three Black children in New York State living in poverty, when you see 12 million children all across this country in a 2022 society living in poverty, 34 million Americans afflicted by poverty, right? This is a pain threshold that doesn't just impact the people stuck at the bottom. It impacts all of us because we're spending more and more money trying to address a problem we haven't found the magic silver bullet to fix. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, the people now experiencing the ravages of the inflation who realize I'm not as well off as I thought I was, the fact that we have a middle class that is becoming an endangered species because people have the trappings of a middle class existence, but not the substance of a middle class lifestyle because everything they have has been paid for with debt. Down to the leggings that the daughter wears, down to the coat that the son wears, down to the car in the driveway. It's all debt. 20 years ago, they owned these things. Now, even the clothes have been paid for with a microloan on Afterpay. This is what we're dealing with right now, where people simply do not have the resources they need to sustain their way of life. Whether we've got people in poverty or even people who call themselves upper middle class, they're paying for things with money they don't have because the substance of that American economy is little by little not working for nearly enough Americans.
It's so true. This thing called the progressive left that is going on that is being talked about all the time. You know, when I was a young man, the very words that are often associated with that phrase, progressive left, would be things like socialism, Marxism. Those words would have been instant words that would have been struck from almost any conversation and would have been looked at as evil and the enemy. And yet now we live in this upside down political kind of universe where these things are not only being talked about by the news media, sadly, a lot of young people are buying into that. And I guess my question to you is, what's going to be the antidote for that?
Well, I often say, right, like the down payment on neglect is always free, but the cost is often too high to bear. And we are in the midst of bearing that cost and shouldering that burden like never before. When you look at past instances of people involved in crime, young people who get together to commit a crime over a sum of $20,000 for which they'll have to split with seven people, and yet that crime could cost them the rest of their lives in prison. Why would you risk your life to split $20,000 with seven people when it could cost you 10, 20, 30 years behind bars? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, well, you don't necessarily believe that your life holds any intrinsic value. I make that correlation to some of the policies that we see emerging in our politics. How in the world could something like socialism, which is a failed ideology, it quite literally has never worked in the history of the world. Why would it be that so many people of good conscience would turn to a policy, would turn to a profile of issues that have never worked? And the question is desperation. When you feel as if your life does not necessarily hold any value, or if you feel as if the institution that you're fighting against, which in this case is America itself, has been bereft of the value or has not imparted the value to the people that it's claimed on paper to provide, people start looking in strange places for salvation. As Abraham Lincoln said, driven to their knees by the overwhelming conviction that they have nowhere left to go. And when free people feel as if they've been driven to their knees, they start having a strange perspective on the world that they currently live in. Because the world from your knees looks quite different than the world that you see when you're standing tall. And so we just need to start finding ways to get people to believe again in America, get people to believe in the equality of opportunity that was promised on paper, and then have leadership that is willing to pay the political price to ensure that whether we're talking about the education of our children, whether we're talking about access to healthcare, whether we're talking about providing people with a pathway to economic opportunity, that all of those things have been updated for a 21st century world that allow us to make sure that people have confidence in this nation that we have built together.
Yeah, this is one of the big things that I think people, even who voted for this administration, might be having a bit of buyer's remorse. Would you agree with that, that there's a good number of people who voted, who believed that he was going to be kind of the great combiner and kind of bring everybody together? And instead, we're seeing a doubled down attempt at pushing all of the things that most Americans don't want, and yet they're being forced, almost like force feeding upon us. Do you feel that in New York, are you seeing people having buyer's remorse?
Certainly. I mean, I think you have to look no further than the crime. No one signed up for an increase in the homicide. No one signed up for an increase in shootings. And yet the same people who pushed defund the police and the same people who brought us these outrageous bail reform laws will stand in front of cameras with a straight face and say that the data shows that there's no problem with the bail reform laws that lets rapists and murderers and individuals who are violent criminals out on the streets with very little pushback. That is just dishonesty that most people cannot countenance. And so I think on some basic level, we just have to get back to the point of saying, when you're looking at chicken tenders being $15 at the local diner, I was at a diner in central New York this week where they had a sign on the door that says, our apologies for the increase in pricing, but we have to raise the prices in order to afford to provide this item. That's a real problem. When you've got parents that can't find chicken nuggets in the freezer section at the grocery store because of supply chain issues, that's a real problem affecting real people. When you end up with people who simply are paying outrageous amounts of money for gas, $5 on pump two can't even get you home anymore. Because, again, we're paying $400 million additional on fuel versus where we were a year ago because we shut down the Keystone pipeline here at home but authorized a natural gas pipeline from Germany to Russia. That is the type of policy that flies in the face of logic. that is an affront to the notion that we would put the American people first. We just have to get back to policies that make sense, common sense for common purpose. And right now, we're not getting a lot of that.
Do you see any immediate relief in this supply chain breakup that's been going on in America? I mean, what you said about the chicken nuggets is so true. And when you go to a lot of the grocery stores, a lot of the department stores, or thinking of places like Walmart or whatever, there are a lot of aisles that are just barren. They're just bare. There's nothing there. Do you see any immediate break in America's supply chain?
Well, look, I mean, I think certainly it's a complicated problem. There's no immediate relief on the horizon, as I've said before, right? Like, if we didn't get there overnight, the notion that somehow the solution can be achieved overnight is likely a lie. So we're a long ways off, specifically because we have not spent the time fortifying our own supply chains, easing the pressures on the supply chain. If the feed that you have to give to the pigs goes up, obviously the cost of bacon is going to go up as well. So mm-hmm. What have we done to alleviate that burden? We haven't done much of anything. So look, I think all across the spectrum here, again, New York State being a working class state filled with working class people, but not nearly enough working class opportunities to be found. The factories have been shutting down for a very long time. The small farms have been dealing with federal policies and state policies that make it harder and harder for them to even manage to compete with those larger corporate farm entities that are monopolizing our ability to have food that is available. Food prices hitting all-time highs here at home and around the globe. This is not an isolated issue. It's going to take a robust effort to combat it. But the first thing that we need to do to make sure that we can deal with the present crisis and ensure that we never find ourselves in crisis again is to fortify our ability to do end-to-end here at home what we have spent too much time relying on the world to do on our behalf.
You know, you're aiming at one of the highest offices that one can run for, the U.S. Senate in New York. And obviously that is a big, big goal. And it's a wonderful goal to have. A lot of people who are listening to this need to be involved as well in their lives, but would be on the local level, perhaps for county commissions. What advice do you have, Joe, to people who feel like you did when you looked around and realized that I got to do something? What advice do you have to them?
Well, look, first and foremost, I would say don't allow anyone to tell you that it's impossible, right? I've got people telling me that it's impossible to run against Chuck Schumer. And look, the hard truth is that there are Republicans who don't want Chuck Schumer to go anywhere, who want him to be the boogeyman that they can point to, because ironically and sadly, in our politics, we can get more done by pointing a finger at the person on the other side than we can get out of actually solving people's problems. Back in the day, we used to solve people's problems and trust that they would reward us for that stewardship with their vote. These days, we simply leave problems unsolved and try to figure out who can be better at placing the blame at the feet of somebody else. That's the person who gets the vote, and yet the American people are stuck with the pain.
Hey, Joe, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. We're going to have a break here. We'll pick this up when we get back. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today, Joe Pinion, and this is riveting. We'll be back with Joe in just a moment. My guest today, Joe Pinion. Joe is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. What an amazing goal. And I appreciate people who do that out of conviction. And Joe has described that he looked around, saw the political landscape, saw the things happening in the country that he loves, and he knew he had to get involved and gave up a very successful career, at least for the time. In this season of your life, with Newsmax and being on television, other shows as well. But this is your all in, and this is what you're working toward. And we were talking at the end of the break. I posed a question before the break, I posed a question about your advice, and I'd like for you to pick up any other thoughts that you would have for people who are needing, whether it be on the county commission or maybe in a school board or any position like that, that they feel they could be making a difference, your advice to them.
Well, no, I think, again, not allowing people to tell you that it can't be done, understanding that change in the world only happens when a few committed people commit to doing what they can, where they can, to influence people wherever they may roam. And so, again, you know, as Second Chronicles reminds us, you know, if my people called by my name, so humble themselves, pray, seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, forgive their sin and heal their land. If we want our land to be healed, if we want our society to function as a mirror of the love that God has for each and every single one of us, then we have to be willing to put in the work. We have to be willing to go out there and show people that we are committed to building the world that we describe, to modeling the values that we say we claim to uphold. All those things are possible with little effort, with a lot of faith, and with a strong commitment.
It sounds like that's how you kind of went through the counting the cost process yourself, right?
Absolutely. And I think for me, like I said, my mother wasn't the happiest at the beginning. I call there was about 17 days of weeping. But,
wow.
You know, as I told her and I told many people in my family, look, there are some things in life worse than not having your own television show. It's called not having a country. And for me,
it's well said.
We got to the point where, look, I loved what I was doing. I was immensely grateful to Chris Ruddy, the CEO of Newsmax, giving me this opportunity, in many ways an opportunity that paved the way for me to do what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. It was one of the greater blessings of my life. But I just got to the point where it felt as if we were just nibbling at the edges. It felt as if we were on the brink of a crisis from which we may never recover as a nation. And sitting behind the desk, talking about it, stopped seeming principled and started to feel like an act of cowardice. And so I thought, if we had a message that we believed could carry the day, if we had a message that we thought could change the tenor of our national conversation, if we thought we had a message that would allow us to get in a position where we could truly begin to empower the people again, that we had no choice but to take on this challenge, irrespective of what that might mean for us personally. And so we are all in. As you said, we have crossed the Rubicon. Once you march on Rome, you are an enemy of Rome. But in some ways, that's what may be required to save Rome. And I think that we can build that coalition of committed souls who want to save the Republic all across this nation, because whether you live in Florida, whether you live in Texas, or whether you lay your head in New York, we know that everything that Chuck Schumer does in the name of New Yorkers down in D.C. affects all Americans of all walks of life. And whether you, no matter where you live, you can make phone calls on our behalf. You can send text messages on our behalf. You can send $1 at a time or $5 at a time. It all adds up to us being able to get our message out there and truly talk about an America that works for each and every single one of us.
One thing I want to ask you about, and you would be a very good person to ask this question to, and that would be the things we hear. We know we can't trust anything in the mainstream media. I think one of the lasting legacies that Rush Limbaugh brought to all radio listeners is that by terming it mainstream media and almost state-run radio, that kind of a thing, you know, what happens on the air in so many of these outlets, it's almost like the official mouthpiece of the progressive left. And when you think about Newsmax, now Newsmax had a rise in popularity that was massive in 2020. Wouldn't that be your perspective as well?
Absolutely. And I think that there are a lot of people who are starting to recognize that the words coming out of the mouth of the people on their television set are not beyond reproach. And so, again, when you're looking at a scenario where, let me take a step back. No average person would believe you if you told them everything that happened in 2021 was going to happen,
right,
and that the media would effectively be silent on all of it. In this past year, Russian hackers compromised our beef supply. The media has practically ignored it, called it commonplace, effectively. Russian hackers have compromised our fuel supply, 35% of the fuel to the Eastern Seaboard. The media has effectively stayed silent, all while the president of this nation says that he takes Vladimir Putin at his word, that he has no idea how this was done, as if somehow you can basically hack the United States of America from a coffee shop in St. Petersburg, and Vladimir Putin doesn't know about it. These are real problems, serious crises that we've been facing. For all intents and purposes, Russia has declared war on the United States of America, and we're running around talking about January 6th and all types of things, which, by the way, are being fully investigated by the Department of Justice. And yet somehow, if you listen to your television set, you would think that nobody has done anything about it. So look, I think that the American people know when they're being sold a fake bill of goods, and we need to just get back to focusing on how do we make sure that we can take care of our number one responsibility to the people that call this nation home, the safety and security of the American people. That starts with making sure that we can secure our southern border. That starts with making sure that people can feel safe in their own home, in their own community, when we've got homicide and shootings run amok. And that starts by making sure that people have the basic financial security they need to provide for themselves and their family. And certainly they can't do that when the inflation is so outrageous and egregious that it obliterates any increase in wages and it obliterates any increase that people have seen in Social Security. Mm-hmm. That is our charge in this campaign. That is our challenge in this country today. But that is our obligation if we are going to make sure that America endures.
Wow. Do you feel that there's enough muscle and enough support by those against the progressive left in the Senate or in the House, with these margins being what they are? They're very, very close. Senate, obviously, just one vote from being the other direction with regards to this thing of the filibuster, which is really the only, I guess you could say, deterrent that some of the ideas that Biden has put through, President Biden has pushed for, like the Build Better program and all of that. This filibuster seems to be a major thing to fight for.
Let's be very clear. I've often said, if you find anything in our divisive politics that both parties want to get rid of when they have the power, and both parties are desperate to hold on to when they are out of power, we should do everything in our power to make sure that it stays exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the filibuster is one of those things that prevents what the world has always called the most deliberative body on the planet, the United States Senate, from devolving into a food fight. That is what they want for our democracy. They want mob rule. They want a food fight in the United States Senate. This is not something that we should allow or want to encourage. We should want robust debate. We should want the institution that is the United States Senate to be forced to find common ground and common purpose, even in a time when it is very difficult to do. That to me is what is at stake right now. And I would encourage people all across this country to say, look, you know, we have to buck common logic and common and some of this, these common assumptions that we make when it comes to our politics, to say that, oh, we only focus on these two races and these other five races are foregone conclusions. I think that that in many ways flies in the face of what America truly is, which is a republic filled with people who are informed enough to make their own decisions. And mm-hmm. I think that as Republicans, we have to stop assuming that certain people aren't going to vote for us, that certain states aren't going to vote for us, and simply take a different kind of message that is focused on their pain and their needs, not our ambitions. And in that way, we will be able to finally move the needle in places where we thought it was hard to do.
My goodness. One of the things that everyone is fighting right now is this thing called inflation. And, you know, we're seeing inflation happen. It's just cooking. It's increasing. Gas prices going up through the roof. At my local gas station yesterday, from the day before, an increase of 14 cents per gallon. It's edging up, and now I think the $4 mark, that used to be like the horrible thing for Florida, we're looking at $4, but you've already mentioned New York's way past that already, right?
I mean, it's out of control. I mean, if you look at across the board, right, again, $400 million every single day, more on fuel versus a year ago, because we have effectively gone from energy independence back to energy dependence faster than you can say Joe Biden because of policies implemented by this president. You've got food prices at the highest they've been in over a decade. In 2021 alone, food prices jumped 28% around the world. That's not my opinion. That's the opinion of the UN Food Agency, right? So, you know, this is ridiculous. The average American is being bled out due to policies that don't make any sense. And that's before you get to the people who are basically lost their livelihood in the midst of COVID. So you have people trying to dig out of an economic hole, not of their making, then coming to face with inflation, not of their making, mm-hmm. that makes it even more difficult for them to get out of that hole. And so, you know, people need to recognize they are being defrauded by their own government, that their own government basically, by virtue of government fiat, made their job illegal, then printed billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, sent that money to states because the states cried poverty. And yet those same states are looking at the people who are on the hook for the money the federal government printed, by the way, to pay their property taxes, to pay the beer and liquor taxes if they own a restaurant, to pay the income taxes if you live in a place like New York. So this is the double-edged sword that we're dealing with here, right, mm-hmm. where the people are paying not once, not twice, but three times to deal with a crisis that was not of their own making. So one of the things that I want to talk about quite simply is saying who is looking out for the person who does everything right in the face of doing of everything going wrong? Who is the person that says, great, if you want to bail out the individuals who haven't been paying their rent, that's amazing if that's what you choose to do as a government. But what about the person who emptied their savings account to pay the rent because they couldn't deal with the actual pressure of living day after day in a building they hadn't paid for, even if somebody else in the building hadn't been paying their rent? Who's looking out for those individuals? Who's looking out for the people who do the right things? Who's the person who's looking out for the person who owns the restaurant, who owes the state $20,000, even though the state effectively filed a claim with the federal government saying, we couldn't collect these $20,000, so please send us a check to help balance our budget. The state doesn't get to balance the budget with federal tax dollars money, taxpayer money, and then come back to the taxpayer and say, we still need your $20,000 for fines that we should have never levied in the first place. That's the type of insanity that we're dealing with right now. And I think we have an opportunity to really get some stuff done here if we get the outcome we're looking for in this election in November.
Wow. Well, we wish you the best and we thank you. We're out of time. Give us your contact on the web, your address for people that they can find out more about what you stand for and what you hope for.
Absolutely. You can go to joepinion.com. That's joepinion.com to find out more about our campaign, to volunteer, to donate. You know, every little bit helps. I think we get so many messages every day of people saying, oh, I wish I lived in New York. We would vote for you. We want to support you. You can support us with whatever you have from wherever you live. This truly will be a nationwide effort to take out Chuck Schumer, to take this country in a different direction. And I think people often feel so helpless as they do in their everyday lives. What mm-hmm. can I do? You can engage this campaign. We are inviting you to be a part of this campaign. And together, we will have the opportunity to make sure we can get an America that does work for each and every one of us.
Joe Pinion, my guest today. Thank you, Joe. And friends, thank you for joining us for yet another show. We'll see you next time here on Afternoons with Mike.